I'm Frank Vaughn. It's August 14th, 2025. And I know I said I was going to get into geopolitics today, but I think it can wait for the weekend because we got to address that 800 acres taken from one party and given to another, private property and government property being seized and given to the Quechan tribes through the courts. On this channel, I've talked about the scam that is Canada. And I hope if that term turns you off that you'll just keep listening, because even though I haven't addressed this specific court case, it highlights the problem. It's actually the crown jewel in the problem. As I've highlighted on this channel, your charter rights don't descend from something higher than the state. In Canada, you have no individual human rights that come with you just by merit of existing. Whether you were created, whether you're a product of random evolution, whatever your belief system, the concept of human rights transcends this idea that as a human being just living, you have human rights. But that doesn't exist in Canada. In Canada, your rights come from the state and they can suspend them whenever they want. Now, in the crafting of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which replaced the Bill of Rights, in fact, replaced the entire country in 1982. Everybody was asleep at the wheel. Nobody seems to understand that in the modern push for Canadian sovereignty, the entire country was taken away and replaced already once, at least once. In the crafting of the Charter, property rights were left out of the equation. Deliberately, it was a deliberate decision of the government to leave property rights out of the charter entirely. So what this in effect means is that everybody in Canada doesn't actually own anything. You don't have a right to private property. It's not just your house. It's also your firearms and your plastic straws. The government at a whim. Now, this is all important. It all ties together. We're going to get back to that 800 acres. And what that decision represents. It's not precedent-setting. That's the headline. In a precedent-setting ruling, the BC Supreme Court recognized Aboriginal title for four First Nations, Quechan tribes, Penalakut tribe, Halalt First Nation, and Stizumus First Nation. But it's not precedent-setting. The precedent's been set a long time ago. Manitoba Métis Federation versus Canada 2013, Silcot Nation versus British Columbia 2014, Haida Nation versus British Columbia 2004, Delgamuukw versus British Columbia 1997, and Guerin versus the Queen. There's others, but we're going to stop there because that term, Guerin versus the Queen 1984, was tried at the Supreme Court of Canada. So many courts in Canada are known as the Queen's Bench. I believe it's Saskatchewan, Manitoba, New Brunswick, and there's another one, which refer to their courts, Queen's Bench. But then you have superior courts of justice. You have supreme courts, superior, supreme, superior and supreme on behalf of who? The monarch, the queen, the king. It's in all of our official documentation. Now, the Queen and the King might not have their finger. They might not be involved in Canada directly at all. But the parliament that you elect, this democracy that we supposedly have, which we don't have a democracy, we have a constitutional monarchy. And here's how it works. The main political parties control who gets nominated to run that has a realistic chance of winning. People don't like the party system, don't hate the, like, it, I think hating the party system and wanting to split away from political parties is almost hating the player instead of the system, instead of the game itself. The game is the political parties control the donations. They control the money. They control who gets to run. And in effect, that filter, which represents the interests, the moneyed interests, the people who exist behind the scenes who never stand for election. Some do, but the majority just never get involved directly. They're happy to work their magic behind the scenes. That's where the real power is. It's the Talleyrands, and it's the Bismarcks. It's the Foucaults. It's the hidden hand, if you will. And it's not necessarily alluding to any kind of grand conspiracy or secret society. It's just the way things work. Most people who are smart people prefer to stay out of public life. But I digress. The nomination process and the political parties control who gets to run. They know before they run, for the most part. They know at the very least they're going to have to obey the party whip, but they know who's going to be prime minister, and they know the shape of the cabinet. The prime minister and the cabinet is government under the power of the governor general's signature. The government, not parliament, appoints the governor general. And you may say, parliament has to approve many a thing. Sure, it does. But remember, the political parties control the nomination process, so they control the behavior of the people who get elected before they get elected. So in effect, the government is decided before you ever cast your ballot. And that's just how it works. And while in office, you have no control over your parliamentarians. You can't pull them down. You can't hold them accountable. It's been tried in court before, as I've covered on this channel. And it's been found that a politician has no legal or human decency requirement to actually do the things they tell you that they're going to do. You have no power over parliament. But the government can send parliament home because the two things are two separate entities. And they can continue to rule as they have over the course of the summer. And as they did when Trudeau prorogued in the first place, they continue to rule. Your taxes continue to be extracted at the barrel of a gun, the government gun. You may think that's extreme, but that's what ultimately, that's what authority is. Authority is the government. Authority is not parliament. They continue to take money. They continue to rule and spend in your name. They can cut trade deals. They can do all sorts of stuff. And in effect, create laws, suspend laws, as has been done under Mark Carney. He did those. This is one of the huge ironies of recent times, is that Carney did the fake executive order signings, memeing Trump in the United States. He had the red folio. He had the pen. He signed. Everybody applauded. He even had a hammer and a gavel propped out in front of him. Had absolutely no meaning whatsoever. And the folio that he signed had absolutely no binding meaning. It was all symbolism for the TV, for the camera. It was totally fake. And yet at the same time, this synthetic fake thing was actually far more symbolically real than most things that happen at a government level. Because parliament gets together. They argue back and forth. They do question period. It's all scripted. The questions are known beforehand. The answers are largely known beforehand. And it's this back and forth, and it's all theater. It's all play. That's why they can all get along and be collegial. It's all predictable. But the fact is, Carney signing those fake synthetic executive orders was far more representative of how Canada actually works, even though it was totally fake, than Parliament sitting in session. Truly. But back to the point. Superior courts, Supreme Courts, Queen's Bench decide to take 800 acres, not for the first time, to take 800 acres of private, so-called private land, privately titled land, not privately held. It's not even held. It's titled. It's not owned. Private and public land, and bestow it on these First Nations. The same power that was used to take the land in the first place is being utilized to give the land back. But the fly in the ointment is the Crown still owns and controls all the land. Under the Indian Act, as I've covered in the reserve system, the bands don't even own the land. So to understand, Native Americans living on reserves never get to own anything. They lease or rent their housing from the band. They can never buy it. They can never sell it. They get it from the band. But the real rub is the band itself, who gets all these billions of dollars to keep the scam going, because that's what it is. It's a scam on the Native American, it's a scam on the European, it's a scam on everybody else that's coming into this country. The scam that you don't own anything. The band doesn't own the land either. They just hold it on behalf of the Crown. So I ask, where's the politician? Where's the leadership that's telling you the nature of the scam and saying that maybe in a modern democracy, if we want to use that word, let's just call it a modern state, a modern nation, which believes in full and thorough human rights, that property rights should maybe be enshrined. That instead of having a charter of rights and freedoms, which descends from the state, you should have something far more fundamental. That you should have property rights. Where's the politician that stands up and instead of saying, we need to take pride in our Westminster system, as Pierre Poilievre said, or Doug Ford, saying that we're all united as Canadians against that bad man from the United States, really capitalizing on the orange man bad stuff, having a good time while he's meeting and hobnobbing with liberals who are also more than happy to keep this scam going. Where's the leadership in Western Canada? Scott Moe and Daniel Smith, taking these things that I'm saying here, building them into talking points and delivering them from the platforms that they possess by merit of their position and saying the citizen, not the companies, not the oil, not the energy, not the canola, the citizen. And those things are important too, because that's a whole other dimension. Basically a canola embargo. We're going to get into that in another video. I really don't want to get distracted here. Where is the leadership saying the citizen has had a bad deal this entire time and they should be further empowered? That direct democracy might be on the table. Elected Senate. That, you know, it's difficult. But opening up the Constitution and fixing these fatal flaws with the way that Canada is, or even just creating the understanding among the citizenry that they've been scammed of their human rights. Not a single one wants to talk about it or even hint at it. So to kind of tie this all up, this 800 acres, it's just part of a long story. It's just the latest chapter. There's nothing precedent setting about it. The precedent of Canada is total control by an unaccountable government over everything in your life. And that all you possess, including your bodily autonomy, your right to travel, because we have the whole thing with banning people from walking in the forest. And you know, you have the absurd excuse coming out. It's not saying that people will cause fires. It's saying that you might break a leg. And since emergency crews are busy doing other things, they're not going to come and rescue you. You just trying to walk in the bush. Meanwhile, as I heard last night on Clyde and Marty, Marty brought up a really good point. And that is that the number one cause of 911 calls is overdose in Canada. So why not just ban drug use? I mean, if you're looking at a statistically viable option to make sure that those emergency services are available, you would look at the number one cause for their overuse and you would fix it. Instead of creating safe supply sites and easy drug supply, you'd actually be working hard at the borders and putting your resources up to stop the flow of precursor chemicals for the manufacture of these drugs. We talked about this week the drug bust in Canada and how big the drug problem is. We thought yesterday's video, 10% of GDP tied to drug trade and money laundering in some way or another. And I don't think that's hyperbole. You imagine 10% of GDP tied to just that one facet of the black market at the same time as 8.5% of GDP is the fictional rent that we talked about in a previous video. Just a completely made up number. What is Canada's actual economic value under this system of total top-down crown control? We call it the crown. Superior courts, the Queen's Bench, the Governor General, orders in council. But what is the actual power? Because I don't believe it's the king. I don't believe the king thinks about Canada very much at all. I think we have a class of nobility. I think that's demonstrable. If you read Peter C. Newman's books called The Canadian Establishment and then What is it called? I want to say Triumph, but that's not it. I can't remember the name of the last one he wrote. I'm just thumbing it now, and I'm going to start reading. It covers the period basically at the end of the 90s into the 2000s. About the people who Canada is ruled on behalf of. I think it's reasonable to expect that citizens who are so taxed for this top-down control should know the answers to what the country's actually worth, should have fundamental human rights that the state can't so easily take away. You should have more accountability built into the Constitution for your elected political leaders. Your elected leaders should actually constitute some form of power over the government and not just serve as a rubber stamp body that can be dispensed with once they've rubber stamped the government into place. That's one of the biggest things that frustrates me. The government is not parliament. This should be easy for everybody to admit. But I think the significance of it is lost when you start to understand the government is the lair. It's the political lair. It's the interface between these nobles that I'm talking about and the bureaucracy and the judiciary, which all exist independent of you, the citizen, and your ability to vote. These filters that just take you out of the equation. To bring it all together, the power the courts have used, not for the first time, to take 800 acres of privately held and publicly held land and bestow it upon a tribal grouping is the same power that took it away in the first place. It represents the exercise of the power that is the problem. The core problem is that you don't have anything. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.